Hi, I'm Danielle Carmanis, and welcome back to Karma Has Spoken. Make sure you stay tuned later in the show when we talk to Jared Schlaff and Nate Crawford from Pingree, Detroit. Stay tuned. But first, fashion accessories are what makes or marks a woman. Our next guest is making his mark as an author and internationally recognized fashion designer. He could be rocking the runway anywhere in the world, but brought his talent as well as his industry and education experience to Detroit as chair of the fashion accessories department at CCS. He also happens to have one of the most delicious names ever and is one of my favorite people. Please welcome Aki Chocolat.
Thank you so much.
I just like to say chocolate, but I know.
Yeah, it's a kind of a daily thing that at the airports, everywhere, people are always like, is that your real name? And there's a lot of all kind of a like, oh, are you in the food industry? Are you in the candy industry? But I guess accessories are kind of a
cool kind of
candies.
I mean, do you do a lot with like chocolate brown?
No, well, actually, yeah, that's probably the most common color for footwear. But yeah, I'll stick to my industry. How about that? Yeah.
So speaking of your industry,
yes.
So you are one of the foremost experts in the world on creating shoes. Mm-hmm. You are the guy that all the guys go to find out how to do this. How did it all start? Because I think you have the most interesting journey, and this is not something you originally set out to do.
No, I mean, I've been asked often by press and in interviews that why footwear, why shoes? And after all these years, finally last summer, my father told me, oh, by the way, I never told you this. When you were a little boy, you know, a few years old, I bought you a red pair of cowboy boots and you slept in them. And I was always wondering, why am I so obsessed with cowboy boots? So there you go. There's the answer. However,
wait, do your parents still have the cowboy boots?
No.
Oh, man.
I know.
Do they have a picture?
That would have been so amazing. No.
Oh, that would have been a great cover for your next book.
Yeah, exactly. So I basically, as any child, I kind of wanted to be different than my parents. I live in a very liberal kind of a childhood and artistic childhood. So I decided to become a politician and study politics. And I went to a very conservative school, studied politics, quick to realize I'll never be in politics.
Mm.
However, fashion
is... So was that because you weren't interested in politics or because there was a part of you that was just craving creating?
It was just craving creating. Mm. And I ended up basically in a corporate job in New York City, in American Express, had a good income, had a really nice lifestyle, but I was profoundly unhappy. So I decided to... pretty much everybody's horror, quit my job, cash in, move back to Europe, and start designing shoes.
So how old were you at that point?
I was actually older. I was in my mid-30s.
Really?
So really big life-changing moment. There were a lot of other smaller things that affected it, but I decided that I'm not going to waste my life anymore running after corporate success and wealth, and I really want to commit to something that I love.
Yeah.
I had always designed up to that point, but I kind of like formalized it when I was in my mid-30s.
Yeah. So when you were still designing up until that point, were you still drawn toward accessories and
always,
shoes in particular?
Always, yeah. I also do menswear. I've designed, consulted many companies, but my love always goes to footwear, and there's a sort of a great group in the world, and we're all obsessed about designing and making shoes.
And so from there, what was the next step in your journey to world domination? One step at a time, but I'm bummed.
I was invited to teach at the Royal College of Art and to speak to students. And I thought, gosh, I wish I would have studied, you know, specifically fashion. And they invited me, and to my great shock and horror, they accepted me. So I did my master's degree while I was designing for a factory brand in Portugal. We were designing for Zara and brands like that. And one thing led to another. And once they asked me to teach, and I totally fell in love with teaching. So I'm balancing my life between teaching, designing shoes, and just being involved in the fashion world.
So what do you love about teaching? Let me just say, last spring, I had a chance to be a part of some of the senior presentations and part of a panel that reviewed. And I've known you for a long time now, for many years. I'm constantly saying that you are such a game changer in Detroit, that you, from my perspective, and I'm a trustee at the College for Creative Studies, are such a game changer for the school, for all of the knowledge and perspective and the draw that you have brought. Of course, CCS has always had a huge impact in the automotive world, yeah. right? But what you've been able to create in this community with the fashion accessories world is really amazing.
Oh,
so I've always admired you for that. And I feel like I've always appreciated what you bring. But last spring was the first chance I had to actually see you interacting with the kids. And wow, I was blown away. I don't even think I made it out of the parking structure. And I was on the phone with Pete, just going, I mean, blown away with admiration. They're so talented. They're artists. They can be creative and temperamental,
all
great artists, yeah, right? Yeah. And the way you were navigating and presenting very honestly and very respectfully, you know, critical feedback was unbelievable. So my question is, what do you love about teaching?
Well, I see myself as more of a mentor and a facilitator. I can share my life experience. I can kind of tell whether something is going to work or not. With respecting students, you know, creativity, of course, you don't want them to create boring things and the same things that everybody else is creating. So I just like that, you know, the energy of youth also, you know, I just keep thinking that, my gosh, I mean, their whole life is in front of them. And it's so exciting to be kind of a part of that journey. That's the main thing. But I particularly liked when you did come, because it's always great to get an outsider voice into our little studio. Well, actually, it's not little. So our pretty big studio. So I really appreciated that. I hope you will come again.
Of course. I loved it.
But my goal was to come here when you mentioned the word game changer. Of course, I didn't think that I'm going to be a game changer. But I feel like I've introduced a new industry to Detroit, introduced a new way of thinking. And our chair of transportation, Paul, said that, well, shoes are the first form of transportation.
Mm.
So that kind of linked into the world of transport a little bit. But my goal is to become the premium destination in the world for fashion accessories, design, education. And I feel that we have reached that.
Mm. What surprised you the most when you moved to Detroit?
What surprised me, there's a whole bunch of list of things, but Detroit, just how nice people are. I mean, you come from quite a sort of a jaded, competitive world, and everybody's been so accommodating, so nice, and done nothing but help, and it continues until this morning. People are just really trying to, you know, make my sort of career and life and everything here as good as possible. And I really appreciate that. I only came here for a year or two, mm-hmm. honestly. And I was going to go back to Europe. But
and here you are.
4 years and I'm staying.
Okay, so my last question, what is your best advice for fashion accessories? What do you think is the biggest, I don't want to say mistake people make because I don't want anyone to feel bad, but what is maybe something you would like to see more of or less of?
I would like to see more of quality. I think that if you spend a little more money on well-made accessories made from very, very good materials, you can tell if something is stitched together well or if something is just sort of slapped together quickly. So it's okay to spend a little more money on good quality shoes, good quality handbags, and whatever complements your apparel.
So for everyone listening, I'll often tell Pete, it's not how much you spend, it's how much you save.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right? So for anyone who's listening, they should probably go shopping and spend a little bit more on a quality piece. And then yeah. they should tell their spouses or whoever that it was a good investment because Aki said so.
Yeah. It's longevity. It's my form of sustainability as mm-hmm. well. So yeah, that's my advice.
Okay. Thank you for coming by to chat.
Oh, thank you.
It's been said that to truly know someone, you have to walk a mile in their shoes. But would you be willing to step into those shoes if the person that wore them had been willing to go to war and die to protect the freedoms that we might take for granted? It's a pretty big idea to wrap your mind around, right? Well, our next guests have taken some huge steps and now lead a social impact business called Pingree Detroit, which is a team of veterans and civilians that manufacture footwear and other products. What's even more impressive is that they do it in an ecologically conscious way while providing good living wage jobs that support neighborhood resiliency. It's my pleasure to introduce Jared Schlaff and Nate Crawford II. Hi, guys.
It's great to be with you.
How you
Did
doing?
I get all that right?
Yeah. I'm sorry. My mom would
get on me if I didn't say Nathaniel Crawford.
Okay.
So let me get that.
Okay, so who are you named after?
My father.
Your father. Okay, Nathaniel. But I can call you Nate.
Yes.
Right? Okay. So where should we start? How did this all take us back to the very beginning of where this got started? And what was your individual journey? And then where did your paths come together to create this?
Sure. So I'd love to start at the beginning, then Nate can kind of jump in.
Yeah,
when
perfect.
When Nate first got involved with us. Pingree Detroit, we were founded in 2015, but we didn't take the traditional journey. Most companies start with a product or an idea and then look at kind of bringing to market and then having folks to make it. We started with how can we impact the people starting out with. So in my neighbor on the east side of Detroit, I've lived in Detroit since 2010. I was born and raised in Waterford, Michigan, not too far from here. And I was meeting too many hardworking folks that were trying to find employment opportunities that were meaningful, that were local, where folks who work with their hands and can make a living wage doing it. In particular, we're finding too many folks who are unemployed that were also veterans, and that doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so in this moment of time in Detroit's resurgence and in America, as we work and make our neighborhood stronger, we started the question of what could we create that could create employment opportunities for these veterans that I was consistently meeting that were looking for an opportunity. And so we landed on producing footwear and accessories after asking the question, well, you know, what hasn't been done in Detroit in a really long time, or what can we do better? And we hadn't produced footwear since 1953 in Detroit, and we've never done sneakers. And so the sneakers that Nate and I are wearing are literally the first sneakers ever made in Detroit. Nate leads our whole footwear division. He's one of our co-owners. I'll let him talk about that a bit more, but just really homelessness and veterans should never be in the same sentence. Unemployment and veterans shouldn't be in the same sentence. When we have all these freedoms we so appreciate, we often don't know how we got there. We don't often appreciate the full value and what really is, frankly, a duty of all civilians to collectively lift up and create opportunity for each other and support our fellow brothers and sisters who have served.
Mm. So were you always like this? Did you always feel a call to service? Were you always looking for opportunities to give back? Or what did you study in school?
I studied public administration and policy, so okay. I wanted to be a public servant. I also studied business and environmental studies when I was in school. I've always looked at and said, you know, if there's a problem, like, what can I do to fix it? Like, the first recycling program ever in any Waterford schools, I started in seventh grade because I'm like, that's why are we throwing away pop bottles? Like, why can't we recycle this? I've always wanted to do something to make life better.
Yeah.
And this opportunity with Pingree was a shift from more of my nonprofit background to saying, you know, how can we create value? So like literally every veteran in Detroit who joined our team after 1 year can have a co-ownership stake in the company.
Oh,
so
wow.
77 cents of profit is shared with the workers on our team to really create that full wraparound support system.
And what was your background in nonprofit?
I've started and launched a number of nonprofits since 2010. In my last full-time career before I left it to do Pingree, I went back to bartending one night a week to pay my bills.
Well, yeah, good for you. You know, I often say when you people start a nonprofit and they have the best of intentions and they want to do such good work. And I think it's a hard reality that running a nonprofit is a lot like running a small business, and it's a labor of love and it's hard. So how many nonprofits had you started before you got to Pingree?
So three.
Okay.
So three full time. So different sizes, different scopes, and everything ranging from youth entrepreneurship or youth mentorship to environmental justice and kind of supporting residents, especially in Detroit, around access to healthy, breathable air and doing what we can to really give voice to folks.
So I have to tell you, I really applaud that you kept on keeping on, right? That you kept doing it. And you said that at one point you had to go back to bartending, but you didn't give up. And, you know, if one nonprofit, you got that started and then you started another one and then you kept on going. That's really, really tough to do, and good for you because it brought us to where we are now with Pingree and Nathaniel. So, Nate, what's your story?
Well, mine was a sense of service I had prior to the military. It's sort of like just the upbringing early on. My mom had me in Little League, PAL, Football League, and the community. We did the breast cancer walks and the March of Dimes walks.
Yeah.
So all of that had me built up early on with a sense of service in the community.
Yeah. Well, so your mom has a sense of service.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So how many siblings do you have?
I have two older sisters, a stepbrother.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so your mom wanted you all to see the world as bigger than you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She really, really saw that early on and got us in a lot of events that involved in the community early on. And that that kind of put something in me early on before mm-hmm. I joined the military.
Yeah, once of course.
Joining the military with that service, that was huge, and meeting a lot of different veterans. And once I transitioned out of the military, I noticed that it was a difficulty finding that service amongst in the civilian world.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of difficult, especially at the time when I got out was 2008, and you know the housing market during that time. So finding sustainable work and a livable wage job at that time was kind of difficult.
Yeah.
And now that I've come around with Pinger Detroit, it's, oh, wow. It's so many avenues and opportunities for veterans that I could see transitioning out of the military now that this is huge. Trade and ownership within the community for veterans that are returning home out of the military and transitioning is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty the cool. dream.
Indeed,
right?
Indeed.
So going back, how old were you when you enlisted?
I was 20, I believe. Yeah, okay. 20 years old.
Did your mom know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is it something that had been on your radar, something that you had thought about doing for a long time?
No, I think once I graduated high school, I didn't have a hone on. I didn't have a sense of what I want to do.
Yeah.
I just know I want to help people.
Mm-hmm. And where did you go to high school?
I went to Martin Luther King High School.
Okay.
Graduated 2001, MSAT, Math, Science, Applied Technology.
Okay.
I was also fortunate to have AutoCAD at Go Lightly, which is down on Jefferson and Davidson,
okay.
And Dickerson, which helped me now what I'm doing today at Pinger Detroit, where we do some laser cutting and things of that nature, and I'm able to use those.
Isn't that amazing? So when you think back how your journey, like all the pieces were falling in place without mm-hmm. you even realizing, well, really for both of you.
Right.
And I think it's part of what makes your story so extraordinary. And then, you know, how you guys came together. But I have to tell you, I'm always fascinated and have had few opportunities to actually talk to someone who enrolled in the military when they were 20 years old. I mean, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on in the Middle East. I mean, I would think it must have been terrifying. Right. I mean, there's a lot of security around the military. I mean, the American military, we know what we're doing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But you're going to a foreign place. And so where were you deployed?
Well, my first base was Dover, Delaware. And
that's not
then,
so bad.
No. After being there 5 months, they told me I was going to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
That's where it turns.
That's okay. Fortunately, at the time I went was 2003, 2004. Mm-hmm. So it was fairly early in the war. Wasn't too bad. We were in a transition area for people that were in more harsher areas. They would transition from there to our base to a rest and relaxation base. So ours was sort of it was okay.
Okay.
Later on.
Okay, meaning it was safe.
It was safer.
Okay. So what was, this might be a strange question,
no problem.
But what was it just being there? I was in Tokyo a few weeks ago. Never really been on my radar, and I'd never been to Asia, and I was blown away by Tokyo. Have either of you been to Tokyo?
I went to Kadena.
Okay.
And that's a base in Japan, but I don't think it's too close to Tokyo.
It's maybe one of my top three favorite places in the world. I know. I wasn't expecting that. My husband's never been to Asia. I came back and I said, we have been to some amazing places. We have to move this to number one. I was amazed by how clean it was. It was very, very safe. I had a car to take us around because I was only there for 2.5 days. So we were trying to fit in a lot of things. And I ended up canceling the car and just taking the subway. It's the busiest subway system in the world. But not only is it very clean and safe, it didn't smell. Right? You know what I'm saying? So my point is, I always wonder, and then there are certain places, my husband is Greek, so we've been to Greece a few times, and, you know, it smells, you know, it's just wonderful, right? And there are places that aren't appealing to me simply because I'm worried I'd be put off by the smell. And I'm not saying that would be the case with Afghanistan, but I just wonder, being an American, being a Detroiter, and suddenly you're in Afghanistan, what did it smell like? What were you eating? Were they bringing you American food? Were you eating a lot of ramen noodles?
Yeah, we had a different diets. For one, air transportation was my job, so I would ship cargo when I was in Dover, Delaware. I'd ship these cargoes and perishables over to Afghanistan and other bases, so I would already see going over what they were getting.
Mm-hmm.
When I got there, we called it Sharpie chicken because it was baked chicken, but it had grill marks on it. And we were like, where is this shrimp? And we had surf and turf. And we're like, where's the water around here?
Yeah.
So it was funny. What else did we have? We had a few perishables here and there, fruits and vegetables. But it was pretty good on the diet. The smells, not too many smells.
No.
other than the trash pit where we would burn all the fuel, I mean, all the trash, not too many smells.
Was there anything about the experience with your senses that made you really homesick?
No, I was too much in enjoyment of the scenery. Where I was in Bagram, Afghanistan, we were in a valley, so we didn't see too much outside of the mountain range. That was pretty cool. Well, we were fortunate enough to go off base to an orphanage and pass out clothing to an orphanage. So I went through a city or two, and it reminded me of one of the parts on Call of Duty. It's one of the older Call of Duties where you're driving through the city and it's dirt everywhere. It was weird.
What were you driving in?
We were driving the SUVs, different SUVs, and there was a few.
You weren't in a tank.
Convoy. No, they had a convoy, a Humvee in the front and a Humvee in the back.
So, you know, I think as Americans, we have these ideas of war, right? And I think the reality is a lot of what we know or what we think the experiences are based on movies, right? So it might be like the beginning of Iron Man, right? And everyone's mad and you're in, you know, some sort of a caravan or you're in a tank and people are yelling as you're going past, but you didn't feel that way or?
No, it was kind of weird. I tell people because I was stationed in Osan, Korea as well for a year, and it was kind of a paradigm switch a little bit. You would think in Afghanistan, some people would think in Afghanistan you're in a war zone, you'd be more worried. I was more worried in
no kidding. Korea. Well, see, I think these are really important conversations because, like I said, like me, a lot of what I think I know might come from the news, but, you know, the news right now is so crazy, right? On both sides, it's crazy, right? And we get a lot of what we know from movies. I have four little boys, so I'm watching a lot of superhero movies and, you know, trying to extract bits and pieces, but we don't very often have an opportunity to actually talk to someone who served and find out what their experience was like. So I think that's reassuring to hear from someone who's in Afghanistan say, no, it was, you know, the people were good. They were good to me. But then what was Korea like? Because Korea generally doesn't really occur to us.
At the time I was in, you had Kim Jong Il, you had daddy in there. So he was
with Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
Right?
And the thing is, the difference is in Afghanistan, I sort of going back to the movies, you have people on that wall. In Korea, you are mingling with the neighbor, with the natives in the area. You are off base. You can walk off base in the community. The difference was we had I think they had found two Al-Qaeda members off base in not too far from the base, and we had a curfew change from 12 to 9 o'clock. But in Afghanistan, I can go to sleep because I got the Marines out there not sleep.
Yeah,
so
we love
it's
the
a
Marines.
Little, it's a little, difference. It's kind of weird. And then one more quick thing. While I'm on the flight line, I did air transportation, so when I'm on the flight line, there could be an airstrike of any sort where chemical gas or anything like that. And I would have to get prepared as opposed to when I'm in Afghanistan, I got a bunker where my stuff is already there. It's a little different. So it was kind of weird.
Okay. So, and Jared, we're coming back to you.
Yes.
Cause it all ends up, you know, both of your stories, I could just talk to each of you for this entire 40 minutes. So I just have another question for you. Now I feel like I should call you Nathaniel. Tell your mom I'm very conflicted today. But Nate, so, you know, when you talk about you don't really know what's going to happen or the curfew change, did you feel like you were living with a constant cloud of anxiety or, and what would you guys do as a group? What would your group do for, you know, we talk here in the States a lot about the mind-body connection, right? Or I'll talk a lot about, because I love it, a program, a nonprofit that I started 15 years ago, which Jared gives me such empathy and appreciation for what you've created because I just wanted to fight childhood obesity. And then it evolved into mindfulness. And we've worked with, I think now, almost 17,000 kids in Detroit and didn't mean to be yoga or mindfulness based. But the kids, it was just one of the activities that we introduced. And the kids spoke to us. And we were at this class in particular in the projects. And I mean, it was like the yoga instructor was Jay-Z. I mean, these kids were just hanging on him and begging him to come back. And we thought, this doesn't make sense. We just didn't see this coming. And then when we really stopped and stood back and assessed, we thought, this actually makes perfect sense, right? Mm-hmm. So these kids that we're working with who are living in such high stress environments, right? we know they're living in high stress environments. Right. It gives me goosebumps still to talk about it. I try not to cry because I, you know, my heart just bleeds for them. They don't even know they're living in high stress environments. This is just their normal, right? And every child, every person deserves to feel safe, to feel calm, right? To be able to sit and be still in a safe environment. Or, you know, if I was talking to you guys right now and said, wait a minute, just give me a second. You wouldn't really think anything of it, right? These kids, they don't even know that's an option, that sometimes you just have to collect yourself. And of course, what you're consuming and all that, and, you know, food and all that plays a factor. But it's so important. And the kids that I'm talking about, you know, they can't even go walk around the block because there's, you know, issues with stray dogs, as you guys know, and stuff like that. So as you're talking and I'm thinking about your experience, and you can take us through it, but I wonder really every day, what was the mindfulness like? How did you, there had to be this cloud of anxiety knowing that there could be an airstrike at any time. There could be, you know, a terrorist at any time. Could you even let yourself think about that? Or did you guys work out a lot? What did you do to take care of yourself mentally, physically?
Fortunately, we were not in a very active war zone or theater, as they call it. We were outside of those areas, so we didn't have to attend to it so much as someone that would be in an active war area. Fortunately, today with technology changes, I don't wish, but if the opportunity had arisen, I would have been in a situation where I could talk about the technology change in the military. I didn't see it at my time. We had calling cards, so I would have to call and like that. Nowadays, I wonder the connection. I could say for myself how easy it would be to me connect to home if I could FaceTime at home. I'd be at ease in a war zone. I would be a little bit more at ease as opposed to, I don't know if she's going to answer. I don't know who's picking up, this, that, and the third. But today, I can call and see your face and, oh, I'm going to go to sleep. Yeah, we're going out to the range. We got to do a convoy in the neighborhood next week. I can sleep better now. I know that I spoke to you. You saw my face. There's a lot that has changed over that time. So
I feel like another area that I really applaud you guys is how you're taking care of veterans when they return. And it's a huge problem. I don't think many people, you know, including myself, I'm still learning more about it, the extent of what's going on here with veterans who are returning and their mental health. And I don't know the exact statistics, but, you know, the suicide rates around veterans when they're returning, we can do so much better about taking care of them. Did you feel like while you were enlisted and you were overseas that there was an intention to help take care of you guys?
Oh yeah, tremendously. Okay. Early, even coming in early, we would do for new airmen, you would have people that you could volunteer for, like during the holidays. They say that's huge for suicide watches and things like that. Mm. So you'd had veterans that wanted to volunteer to do, to be the designated drivers, to do suicide watches and things like that. So early on, they got us in that program of volunteering, or just if it was an avenue for us to jump into if you want to help people going through problems like that.
So, Jarrett, I think, you know, like me, there are a lot of people who, as we're learning more about this and, you know, this, I would almost call it an epidemic, right, with the veterans and the suicide rates, and my heart breaks for them. And I think, how do I help? I want to do something, but it seems to be a great distance between thinking I want to help and then actually doing something. You actually do something. You did something. You do it over and over again. So take us back again to starting the company and meeting Nate and how really it was on your radar and this awareness, because you said you were looking for the cause to support. Right. And there are a lot of needs, right? Like there are a lot of nonprofits. There are a lot of issues. Like, you know, I say when people ask me for a gift or support, I say they're all good causes, right? No one ever comes to me and says, will you support my charity? It's just so-so, right? I mean, they're all compelling. How did you land here? How did you really see this opportunity in all avenues where you could really turn this into a business? And sure. And really for those listening who maybe have ideas to serve or want to support, what is your advice for taking an idea into reality and doing it in a really unique way?
Of course. It's great questions. One, I think to answer the last question is every individual has so much ability to make a difference, where each of us, starting with, you know, what are we really feeling called to be a part of? You know, childhood obesity, stress in our young people, stress with our veterans, if we can first identify what we care a whole awful lot about, and then start to just be curious about how could I be a part of doing something about this? What other groups really inspire me that I could contribute to or impact and make a difference for? Pingree Detroit is where we are today because of countless individuals who introduced us, who shared our story on social media, who said, hey, you should talk to these folks who are a contributor, who are a part of our mission. We often say that, you know, we're alongside you because we literally are this community of connection of people who've believed, you know what, there is a better way forward. So I'd say every person has such an ability to make an impact every single day, just sharing with people, being that smile, you know, asking, what can we do about childhood obesity? What can we do about the stress our young people are facing and how can we alleviate that? And so I would say every person has so much more power than they can ever imagine. And especially if you then start to find a couple other people who share that passion, and we don't all have to start our own organizations, but what organizations are out there that really could use our skill set, who could use the person doing bookkeeping, use the person who can help with PR or can help with fill in the blank. There are so many needs and opportunities. I think we just often, we get so busy and it's the problems are so big, we don't know where to start. And so where Pingree started was when we asked that question, you know, I lift up this narrative in different ways, but one of the individuals I met two individuals in the same week who were trying to find an opportunity to work. One was squatting in a house in my neighborhood. Another one had a master's in engineering, but was living in this car. And
How did you even end up having a conversation with them?
So the first veteran actually was squatting in my neighborhood. And as I mentioned before the show that, you know, we have neighbors who make pies for each other. It's a connected community where you know your neighbors.
It's on the east side. Yeah. And I said, I forgive you for that. Because, because if you have neighbors who make you pie, I might want to be an east sider.
it's in the Charlevoix Villages area. Okay. So it's right by Belle Isle. And so, you know, there's this level of connection. And so I knew, you know, when we'd have potlucks, different men and women in the neighborhood would make sure that the elders got a plate. It's that kind of sense of...
Okay, wait a minute. So this is really interesting. So sure. It's a little bit like, okay, let's go through all of this. So because I'm thinking, wait, this is a little bit of chicken or the egg, right? So did you move into this community and then you ended up kind of reaching out, or how did this kind of whole community evolve where you're talking to the squatters? I mean, that's unusual, right? I mean, you grew up in Waterford, you moved to the city. Most people are not growing up in the suburbs, moving to the city and saying, I'm going to talk to the squatters, see where there's a need, right? Like to talk to two people in 1 week. I mean, that's so unique and it's so inspiring, right? And it's such a level of service that I find very inspiring. And it makes me want to keep, you know, a call to action. And I'll tell you quickly, this morning I was doing my morning meditations and sitting still is not my strong suit, right? And I always, being a spiritual person, struggle with that because sitting still is what we're supposed to do, right? And I wish I had taken a screen grab of it and brought it with me today, because the opening line in this one, and I forget if it was Joel Osteen or what, said, service is a spiritual act. And it gives me goosebumps. It took me back. I mean, it physically went, oh, I kind of took my breath away. And that's why, as I'm hearing your story and your acts and talking to squatters and doing potlucks, I'm like, wait a minute, Jared, let's just stop for a minute, because this all is not normal, right? These are profoundly spiritual acts. These are profound acts of service. And so take us through how your whole community started. And my hope would be that maybe those who are listening will start to think, oh, I can do that in my community, even if it's just taking a pie to someone who's homeless, right? So
the community was there a lot longer, you know, way before I came and joined the community. So I've lived in the same neighborhood for about 5 years now. I've only lived in Detroit since 2010, but on this block on Field Street, there is just rooted community, everything from Grace Lee Boggs, who was an activist back in Martin Luther King days, who is, you know, two blocks away from my house, who my favorite quote from her is, we have to reimagine what it means to be a human being at this time on the clock of the world. So I've got those kind of neighbors, right?
And those are good neighbors.
And in particular, I got really connected in with the neighborhood when some folks might have heard that there are water shutoffs happening in Detroit, where with some of the highest property rates in the country, we also have the highest water rates in the country, even though we're surrounded by the world's greatest source of fresh water on the planet. Detroiters are paying more than folks in Arizona. And why is that? Right. But so we had folks who were getting $900 water bills, and you're shutting off neighbor. Like literally I had a 90-year-old elder who got her water shut off. you had babies that are 7 years old who couldn't brush their teeth. In America, this is really happening. In Detroit, that doesn't work. And so a lot of folks are coming together and like literally open up their houses for grandmas to get water and for babies to take baths. Like, that can't happen, but we were letting it happen. And so I got involved in my house that I was living in. We set it up as a water station. So we had cases of water we were giving out to neighbors. We were opening up our space to be able to be used, just because to me, I also am grounded in faith. You take care of your neighbors. You're a part of that community. Faith is action. It isn't just the moments of calm. It's that all of that together. And that to me is living as those who've come before us have showed us how to live. And so, you know, I literally met that one veteran because I literally brought him over a case of water and stuff to make PBJs and said, what's going on? I didn't know who he was, but I had seen him going in and out of this house that was kitty corner from where I lived. And I knew almost every name of my neighbor, you know, 5-6 houses down each way, because I want to be more connected in and have that sense of community. One of the things to bring it back to the veteran piece, one of the consistent themes where veterans have shared with me, and they could speak more powerfully than I could on this, but there's this opportunity to create this level of connection like you experience when you're in the military. When you have this level of almost like a tribe-like experience, and then
no
you
doubt.
Come back home and there's isolation and people aren't working together, it's so much harder to work through stuff. So whether you're that stressed out kid who isn't getting a good night's rest because he's got his cousin's foot in his face, and then he's waking up, he's not getting a good meal to start the day, and he's hungry at school,
yeah. There
are opportunities to do that with community.
Yeah.
And so I was craving an opportunity to be a part of that community. And I didn't really know my neighbors growing up in Waterford. I knew one or two down, but we didn't have potlucks. This is my house. You do you. I'm going to do me.
Right.
And so shifting, because there was a need, there was an opportunity to be a part of, not mm-hmm. to do something out there just to do my little part. And so when I met this guy, I found out that, you know, he was about my age, had been home less than a year and couldn't find stable work. He had slept through his alarm because his phone died because he doesn't have electricity. So he lost his last job. He was just trying to survive, and he's doing a darn good job of surviving. He'd been in more terrible places than a house in Detroit, and he didn't have a support system, didn't have a family. Like, his only family was his brother. And so there's just all these stories that I could go deep into.
That's what I'm thinking, the stories. And so Veronica Scott has been on the show before, of course, with the Empowerment Plan, and she's like amazing is an understatement, right? Like what she's created, what she's done. And I think her only moments of frustration can be around, it seems to me, would be around the lack of understanding around the homeless and what makes them homeless, right? I was in Grand Rapids last weekend, and I was stopped at an intersection, and there were a lot of people asking for money. And I was just thinking about Veronica and her amazing ability, which you guys share as well, to see the stories, right? To see beyond someone who's just standing on the corner with a sign. And, you know, unfortunately, we just tend to think, oh, you know, that's a junkie, or oh, they're just going to use the money for drugs, right? But what you guys see and what Veronica sees, and I hope for those listening will help all of us see, as these are stories, these are people. And there is, you know, and I know Veronica advocates for, you know, the single moms, but there's also a lot of mental health issues, right? And the inability to thrive. And, you know, they don't choose to be homeless, certainly, right? And what you guys, of course, are seeing with the veterans, and what, you know, Nate, you see that they have gone through. And there is certainly, for anyone who's been in the military, and I think we tend to know this, there is absolutely a camaraderie and a shared experience
Indeed. That
we can never really truly understand. And so the two of you coming together, how did that happen? Because it really is a game changer in starting the business and the ability to reach and make change.
I think you can somewhat understand it somewhat for those who are fortunate to have families. Some who are not, it may be a little difficult, but for those who have families and are fortunate to have close-knit families, you can kind of understand the military camaraderie a little bit. It's a togetherness. It's a through the thick and thin, through the hard times. It's you always can come back. You can argue, but you always come back. That's sort of our thing in the military. We may argue with the army,
but we take care of our own, right?
But we definitely take care of each other in our own. Yeah, we do.
Like I might fight with my brother, but you can't pick on my brother.
Right.
So there's a little bit of that. So then you're coming home and you're seeing, you know, your brothers and sisters in arms, right, who are struggling, and you're seeing this. So how did you guys, and how did it come to be that you guys started collaborating and created this?
I haven't been looking for employment, and I came across Pingree Detroit. Happened to be on my Facebook page and Instagram, and they were looking for veterans and to learn to trade. And I was like, okay, this just seems interesting. But at the time, it wasn't paying as much as this other company that I had an interview with. And I was like, well, this is promising. I'm going to put this on the back burner for a minute, the Pingree Detroit. So I chose the other interviews and I noticed that it wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't something that I felt, it just wasn't gratifying. I wasn't doing nothing for the community. I wanted to do something with a purpose, not just work and make a wage. And I'm like, okay, well, that's why I put it on the background. I'm like, they talked about a trade, working with leather and stuff like that and getting rid of waste and stuff like, okay, let me check these guys out. And I got to talking with Jared. We did like, he told me it was going to be more than one interview. And I was like, okay, this is different. I got to meet Jared. I got to understand his concept and his ideas,
so
where it's coming from.
So what was your first impression of Jared?
I don't know where he came from, but is this I don't know if somebody was in my head listening to me. Is this a setup? Am I on a show somewhere? Because right. Everything he was saying, I'm like, what? Where has this been all these years? Like, what is this? This is what
it
I'm
was
talking
such
about.
Such a need.
Such a need and a specific need. And I was like, yeah, this is great. I was kind of questioning, like, okay, well, this is a suspect. Because like you said, it's... You're doing all of these great things. You're asking questions of your community and what you can do better for the community. And I'm like,
is this guy the real deal?
Is this real?
Yeah.
Is he serious?
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was like,
this guy, he doesn't know me. He wants to help. Okay.
Yeah. And then once I got to meet the team, I was like, okay, this is awesome. I see the uptick in it and where we were located. And once I saw the physical products and things like that, I immediately went to DC Cab real quick. I don't know if you guys remember the movie. With Mr. T, real quick.
Oh, I love Mr. T. But, I mean, no, that was a long time ago.
It was a real quick movie about a cab company, and they, I guess a famous person had left their luggage in a one of the cabs, and they used to sit around this restaurant, local restaurant, and eat. And the famous person came back and wanted to pay the company owner a large sum of money for returning his briefcase. So he did, but the next day, the owner went home. I guess his wife took half. And he kept the business, but he wanted to pay the workers. And he said, you know, how about this, guys? If I pay you this money, why don't you guys put it back in the company and be co-owners with me?
Uh-huh.
And that's what they all did. And they started painting the building and reorganizing the plans and things like that. And I was like, that's huge.
Yeah.
Man, that's,
yeah.
We need that.
I just love that this whole conversation took a turn and we're talking about Mr. T. I tell you what, I research, I prepare, and sometimes things happen that I just don't see coming. And I just love that. When I was little, I had a jean jacket. I had a little pin of Mr. T on it. Oh, yeah.
That's it. 80s.
So do you remember interviewing Nate?
Oh, of course.
So what stood out about Nate when you interviewed him?
His passion, commitment for making his neighborhood better and for being a part of something bigger than himself, for inspiring me with how excited he was getting about some of the vision we were talking about and his own ideas for how we can make a difference. So our company is structured as a worker-owned company for a reason, because we wanted to be able to not only sustain ourselves, you know, with the things that we create, but also we're an L3C. So we're a social impact company with the goal of literally, you know, creating products that make communities better. So, you know, working towards being completely toxic free, 100% waste free, carbon negative. So making a considerable difference by not only offering customers a chance to get
I mean, Jared, when you do it, you do it. I mean, it just never ends. This is so amazing. You know, and these, I mean, we're going to put some pictures on social media. So anyone listening, you have to make sure that you go to their website or visit Karma Has Spoken so you can see pictures of these shoes that I am going to end up with a pair of one way or another.
Indeed.
I'm going to give you guys my sizes and all that. But, you know, and I was thinking how you remember that interview with Nate. And I thought, you know, you can hire people that you work with, right? You can hire people to collaborate with and get the job done. But I think what you both appreciate is the real magic, right, is when you can work with someone who makes you better, right? Someone who inspires you and someone who comes from a different walk of life, different experiences, right, that happen to intersect with you, that kind of get that fire or like flame the fire, right? And get you excited and, you know, take your idea and push you to think we can do this better, right? Like, yeah, we can create jobs for veterans, right? Mm-hmm. But what if we also go to the next level and the carbon footprint? I mean, what?
Yeah,
you know? It's so exciting.
Yeah. So looking at where we want to be 10 years from now, as Americans as what does the next business look like that puts communities first? Mm-hmm. What can we create where all of our products are made with upcycled leather from the auto industry? We take waste that was going into brand new car seats and we take that leftover and turn it into our purses and bags and wallets.
So where are you getting those materials, and have the automotive companies been supportive?
100%. We work with the big three. We work with Lear.
So happy to hear that.
You know, these are, you know, brand new, gorgeous leather that just, you know, otherwise didn't have a purpose in the post-production.
How did you even find out about that?
That's a whole other long story.
More divine intervention, because it just seems to be at every turn in the story.
Literally, I wasn't on an agenda to speak at a conference that had about 150 engineers from all over the country speaking, and I was able to inspire a facilitator to give me 30 seconds to talk about this vision before we'd even started of, we want to create this impact. And do y'all have any materials that maybe we could use as an input for these shoes and these different things? The leather story happened where we had a prototype of a boot and we had no idea how we were going to go about creating something that hadn't been done since the 50s, where everyone we talked to, you need $1 million plus to get this going. And, you know, it's just, it's impossible. And so
people are so discouraging, aren't they? Not overall. I mean, I shouldn't say that. They don't intentionally mean, but people, maybe they're just realists, but it takes the dreamers and go with just a dab of reality, right? So you're speaking at this conference and you're saying, hey, we have a need, or we will possibly have a need for these materials. And someone says, hey, I have a resource with brand new top quality leather that you can maybe have.
It started with a conversation that literally led to like 6 or 7 meetings that led to the people saying, hey, we'd love to support your mission. And you know, some of the materials are donated, some is purchased, and we're able to just literally create otherwise really unique world-class products that, you know, if it's designed for some seats, it's going to be durable,
no
right?
doubt.
So imagine a purse that won't ever break.
You yeah. know?
So that's really a part of the design.
Oh, I could break it.
Challenge accepted, right? You know, but the beauty is when it does break, we want to build into our entire supply chain that we get that purse back, shred it down, and can literally create those fibers into new fibers.
Wow.
We can literally create a new purse from the old purse. We don't see that very much in the current life cycle. It becomes waste, but there's no way that it weighs polluting some person's backyard. That's going into ocean plastics. Right. What if we created a closed loop? And to us, that's a part of our vision of creating stronger neighborhoods. And if we design products the right way, where we're keeping that well-being at the forefront,
yeah,
then anything is possible.
Wow. So how many employee owners?
So, right? So we're a team of 12 right now.
Okay.
And so right now there are 3 co-owners and we've got 2 more in the pipeline. So,
okay.
You know, after 1 year of working with us, you're eligible to be a part of that worker ownership.
Wow. And so what is, you mentioned 10-year, what is the 10-year plan?
So there are so many
world things. Domination. I mean, who even knows? That might be your 6-month plan. I don't want to underestimate you guys at any point.
Sure. There are an infinite number of men and women who we hope to be able to serve and to create alongside. We'd love to have production facilities in every city in the country where we're actually creating alongside men and women. There are so many ways where kind of in this current moment of exponential increase in consolidation, mechanization, automation, and globalization, how can we make sure we create jobs that keep strengthening local neighborhoods, keep the power and the tools in the hands of veterans and neighbors and people who want to be a part of keeping us moving forward.
Right.
And so to us, we look like, you know, if you are co-owning a company, you bring that innovation at every level. And if we have a production hub in Minnesota and Texas, if you're ordering our shoes in Texas, why don't we make them in Texas?
Yeah.
You know, we can have these hubs, we can create that and using some automation that still keeps the kind of the production in the hands of the people who are making the stuff, to us is a win-win scenario.
Wow. So Nate, what's been the most surprising part of this whole process for you?
Oh, wow. So
I mean,
surprising.
You're co-owner of a shoe company, like changing the world.
I think
you didn't see that coming. Well, maybe you did. You saw big things coming.
Early on, I think I told one of my, told Cody early on, one of the Army veterans that learned how to do the sneaker making process. I told him early on, I said, do you realize we're going to be making sneakers that haven't been made in the city since the 50s. It's not like we're joining a company and they were already making sneakers and we just joined and we're in line of making sneakers as well. No. These are the first sneakers since the 50s.
Yeah.
So that, I think I took on early and I've just been doing the work so much that I hadn't took a minute to step back.
Yeah.
So meeting yourself one of the things is meeting the mayor. So some of these things come in and they kind of humble me here and there and I'll be like, wow, really?
Yeah.
This is awesome. This is great. I'm every day is a welcome challenge.
Yeah. I feel that way every day. I think, I can't believe this is my life. Right? Like I've always I've always given, I was thinking, you know, I would, I was a kid when I was, you know, 8 or 9, I would go out and I would shovel the neighbor's snow. And I remember there was an old lady and I would shovel her snow and she would yell at me because she didn't ask me to do it. But I would just keep on keeping on. And I definitely think, and it was kind of something, I read something this morning in my meditations as well, that I think, you know, God trusts people that he knows he can trust, right? So, I mean, if you have had this intention or you've had this pull towards service, then you keep going in that direction. And I forget if it was, you know, to whom much is given, much is expected. And for me, I feel that every single day. There is not a single second of a single day that I take for granted the amount of blessings in my life, right? In fact, we were with some friends last night and we were talking about school lunches and our kids don't like the school lunches. And they're thinking about what they ate when they were kids. And I said, well, you know, I was on food stamps when I was up until I was like 8 or 9, but I really liked the cafeteria food, right? So I had these special passes and I got the mashed potatoes and, you know, the gravy. I mean, I was into all of it. I liked the lunch ladies. They were nice and they would hug me. And I don't think you can do that anymore. So anyway, I mean, to see my life where it is now, like I said, there's not a single second that I don't feel a responsibility to give back, right? Like and it's an honor to have that responsibility. Yes. And I really applaud and appreciate that both of you and your different ways and how you've come together continue to give back. So thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
So where can people find out more about you and get your shoes and the whole deal?
Yeah. So pingredetroit.com, P-I-N-G-R-E-E, Detroit.com. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. I often say if folks could just share with 3 people over the next 3 months, just in passing, about what we're out to create, it literally makes a world of difference. So pingredetroit.com.
So what are you looking for from supporters? What would be the most high impact or meaningful for you? Spreading the word or donations or buying the shoes or?
So there's 3 main areas. So of course, you know, storytelling is huge for us. Word of mouth has been our most consistent sharing of our work. So storytelling, sharing the word, of course, supporting us with our products allows us to keep on growing our team and creating impact. You know, we're still a new startup. We only launched products in 2017, so we're still not even profitable, you know, as a company. So we're still an emerging small business. We are looking for impact investors, and folks can donate through our nonprofit arm. So we would love to collaborate and explore impact with folks. There's just an infinite number of ways to contribute.
Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to spread the word. You know, as I'm listening to you, I'm also thinking about different people I want to text as soon as we're done and say, hey, you need to find out about these guys. A few people I know that support veterans, and I think they should know about this. So, well, thank you very much for stopping by.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
This has been the Karma Has Spoken podcast. If you like today's content, feel free to share our show by email, social media, or any other means. If you've got a question, comment, or other feedback, visit our website at karmahasspoken.com. Keep up with us by subscribing to Karma Has Spoken in your favorite podcast app or follow Karma Has Spoken on social media. Karma Has Spoken is a production of Jag and Detroit Podcasts.